August 23rd, 2012. The time is 1:07 p.m. Eastern, and you have dialed into the monthly IATF Leadership Skills Teleseminar. Today's call does include the opportunity to chat with myself and other people who are on the call and view slides that we are showing right now live at the IATF website, www.iatfconnect.com. And a little bit about the IATF, we are always exploring new technology, that's for sure, and all of our work here is around growing inspired teams. And we do that through calls like this. We have an online community, a virtual community with members in 35 different countries, and lots of things coming down the pike, new things. So our web address is www.iatfconnect.com, and now I want to tell you about our two guests, Susan Gerke and David Hutchins, and they are the creators of a fabulous product that I use myself called Go Team Resources. You can get to the web address through goteamresources.com. You can scroll the page at the IATF website, and you'll see the link to the Go Team Resources there. Susan is also an expert at remote learning and building remote teams. And we've had Susan on in the past on talking about just that. And so Susan is the president of Gerke Consulting and Development. She's in California. She's been in business since 1998 and following 21 years working with IBM. She designs and customizes and implements leadership and teamwork programs with a wide range of clients and organizations, including Bank of the West, City of Anaheim, Human Options, Orange Coast College, UC Irvine, Warner Brothers, and many others. So I'm happy to have Susan on and her cohort, David Hutchins, who is a best-selling author and of many books, and we've had David on separately, too. In addition to having both Susan and David on, they've been on separately. As you can tell, I'm a fan of their work. He is an organizational learning consultant and has worked with Coca-Cola, Walmart, GE, Nike, and many others. He's the co-creator of Go Team Resources with Susan. He is also a member of the leadership board of Stories in Organizations. And so, David and Susan, welcome to the call today.
Thank you.
Well,
I'm going to open things up. You're going to bring our slides back for us, right, David?
Yep, we're looking at David's face here.
You are the main attraction.
So
we don't see your slides
else,
at all, David.
If you would like to enlarge the slides here, you can click on the full screen piece here within that window. It's actually being broadcast to YouTube. So go ahead.
Great. All right, so I'm going to take it away and get us started. Thanks so much, Tom, for introducing David and me today. Hey, we're here to talk about trust. And you know, I think most of us work with teams, and maybe you hear the same things I do. When I get a call that a team needs help, I hear two things more than any other. Either we've got poor communication or we have low trust. And so I suspect that's a common theme for you as well. David, you want to move to our second visual?
And there might be some delay in the slides here, Susan. So the next slide
That's okay.
is up. Okay.
Just so he knows we're moving there. So besides working with teams, most of us have probably also been on teams. And if you're like me, you've been on teams where trust was high, and you've probably been on teams where trust was low. And in my experience, there's no comparison between the two. When we have high trust in our teams, it's a collaborative environment, production is good, quality is great, it's fun, we're enjoying what we're doing, and it's a great environment. When trust is missing, everything's off a little bit. So as we work through this topic today, I'd really like you to start by thinking of a time that you lost trust in someone, lost trust in that team environment particularly. But when you lost trust, and from your experience, what have you found is at stake? And if you want to send some chats to Tom about what you find is at stake in teams when trust is low, Tom, maybe you can share a couple of those with us if you're getting some chats in on that.
Yes. So restate that question again.
So when you've lost trust in someone or when you see trust get diminished, what's at stake? What's the problem? What's the risk? Why do we care, I guess, is the question.
Okay, so why do we care about that? So if you're at the trust, if you're at the chat window, please type in your response. So one person writes loss of productivity. Let's see who else is coming in here. And having to rework things. Yes.
Yep.
Low morale. Lack of trust impacts, micromanaging results. Which is always costly. Disengagement. These are loss of productivity, poor relationships. Very good. Reduction in innovation, creativity. We lose employees. These are all different people. Lack of commitment.
Yep.
Yes. So the clearly the list goes on and on at
good.
The impact of trust, lack of trust.
Good. And so you've all felt it, clearly, and thanks for sharing those perspectives, because that's what we hear as well. And so if you'll shift to the next slide, David, and Tom, when we've done these in the past, we've done polls by having people respond on their telephones. I don't know if you've set up a polling approach today.
I have. Well, one way that we can do a quick poll is to just do a scale of 1 to 5. Just type your number in on the in the chat window. So when you ask a polling question, we'll just have to take a quick look at where people rate themselves.
Okay. So, and yeah, here's really what I want you to think about. So whether we actually do a poll isn't so important. What I'd like you to be thinking about is why are you here today? As I facilitate a lot and trust comes up a lot, that's what would draw me today. But perhaps some of you are having trust issues on the team that you're in or on, or some of you maybe are just trying to find new ways to engage your team in a conversation about trust or a team that you're facilitating or leading. So it could be really any of those probably. And I would say instead of spending time trying to gather that data, let's just move forward if we could.
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay, so hopefully you're coming for one of those reasons. So let me give you very brief information about where David and I come from on trust, and then David's really going to dig into some of the meat about trust here, and then we're going to wrap up with me telling you a little bit about a process we use for trust. As Tom mentioned when he introduced us, David and I created the Go Team product, which is 18 learning modules for team development. The module called Building Team Trust is one of the top 3 sellers of this 18, so that's another indication for us that this is a pretty important topic. I find when I'm working with teams, it's one of the modules I use most frequently as well. And so, again, David's going to get you into more depth about some ways to think about trust. And then it'll come back around to me a bit later, and I'll give you a peek into how we use GoTeam and how that module can help teams figure out how to build trust together. But let's get into, you know, some meat about how you might think about trust differently. So I'll turn things over to you, David.
Okay. Do I sound okay? Can everyone hear me?
Yes, you sound great.
All right, good. Thank you, Susan, and thank you, Tom. So as we just heard from Susan, there's a lot at stake when we talk about trust. You know, it would seem that trust has a qualitative effect on just about every aspect of our work, from how we work together to the results that we're able to achieve together to even morale and how it feels and our ability to enjoy the work. And I don't think that's too hard for people to connect to. You know, most of us can think of a time when we had a high trust relationship on the team and it felt great. And, you know, think about all that you're able to accomplish. And contrast that with the low trust relationship you've had. You know, it's not too hard to bring people along on this. Everyone has those experiences. So there are groups out there that measure the levels of trust in teams and in organizations and even more broadly. And so we can look at that impact. You know, we just discussed some of the individual impact and some of the work impact, but the impact really ripples out. There's ripple effects that go all the way out to the marketplace and even to society itself. One of the great resources for this is called the Edelman Trust Barometer. You should do a Google search for that and check it out. Edelman is E-D-E-L-M-A-N. And it comes out yearly, and the Edelman Trust Barometer compares trust in American organizations to other organizations all around the world. And it's a great resource. And my friends over at Franklin Covey, similarly, have also done a lot of work in this area. And that is what you are looking at now. There it is. So, I'll tell you, as a general trend among these kinds of reports, the news is not great. You know, there is a crisis of trust in organizations today, and we see it in the headlines. What you're looking at right now is from Franklin Covey, and this is from a survey of 12,000 workers just in the United States. And if you look at it, 12,000 workers were given these statements and asked to rate whether it was correct or not for them. I feel safe in expressing my opinions openly without fear of retribution. So this is the first trust criteria. Only 52% of American workers, of these 12,000 workers, said that that is true. So that's good news for those 52%. The remaining 48% do not feel that safety in expressing their opinions. The next criteria in this survey, we live by the principle that my success is your success. So, you know, that's another trust issue. You know, are we able to share success and share credit? And only in 33% of workers, of the 12,000 workers, is that true. And so that's our worst measure up here. And moving more quickly, people are treated fairly. Favoritism is not a problem. In 60% of respondents, that was not true. We do not undermine each other. In 63%, that is not true. We make decisions based on the best ideas and information rather than on office politics. 61% of respondents said, no, we use office politics, and that's how decisions get made. And so this is one snapshot of low trust in organizations. And I'm guessing this kind of data is not a surprise to you. I mean, the headlines have been talking about this crisis of trust in our institutions for a few years now. And you can go back to Enron and the WorldCom scandals and then to the financial crisis of 2008 and more. So this is a big issue in businesses. But I'm guessing some of you, or perhaps all of you, can speak to this experience in a more personal way. And I've got some stories I could tell. I bet you do, too. And so a few minutes ago, we asked you what brings you here. Well, let me share with you what brings me here, because for the past few years, trust has become an important part of my work. Last year, my new book came out. It's called A Slice of Trust, and it's a companion volume to Stephen M. R. Covey's book, The Speed of Trust. And let me just quickly tell you the story behind this, because it's a story about trust. You know, the creation of the work itself is a case study in trust. Because I developed a couple of learning programs for Stephen. Stephen M. R. Covey is the son of Stephen Covey. You know, Stephen Covey, who passed away just a few weeks ago, was the author of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And his son, Stephen M. R. Covey, is the author of The Speed of Trust. And so I developed a couple of learning programs for Stephen to accompany the publication of his book, The Speed of Trust. And from my very first meeting with him and his team, I was stunned and personally convicted by the levels of transparency that he modeled. Technically, at the time when I first started meeting with him, I was a competitor because I'd already started building my own trust program and trust products. But he and his organization shared their business model with me. They shared their intellectual property with me and my team well before we ever signed a contract. And so he extended trust in a dramatic way. And I can tell you the impact of that from a personal point of view. It made me say, I want to work with this guy, and I want to give him my very best work. And so that's the impact. You know, when somebody extends trust to you, it makes people want to rise to their best. It creates loyalty. It creates speed. It creates innovation. And so trust is a good thing to have in the team. And so that's what Susan and I are here to talk about today, is the trust in your team and ideas for increasing that trust so that you too can experience better collaboration, better creativity, better decision-making, better execution, better morale, the opposite of all those things that we listed at the very beginning. So before I move on, should we... Tom, should we pause for questions?
Let's do that.
Comments that we
If you have a question that you would like to, or a question or a comment perhaps what we can do is there's two ways to engage here. One is through the chat window at the IATF website that you see right underneath the slides that are happening. I recognize that some people are not able to access the chat window because you're accessing the website from work, and it may block that because it's chat. It mentions the word chat, and it also is a Flash program, which is just running in the background. So that's one way, and then we can also take a question through the website here, or through the telephone conference call. And if you have a question that you would like to ask literally over the phone in our conference call here, you can hit the 5 and then the star key on your telephone keypad, 5 and star, or asterisk, if you will, one of those. So a question has come through, David, through the chat, and this person writes, how long does it take to restore trust in an organization once it has been lost?
There's a lot of research around that, and one of the myths about trust is that once trust is lost, it takes a very long time to restore. That's a belief that most people hold. Once trust is lost, it's going to take a heck of a long time to do something about this. And research shows that that's actually not the case. Now, the exception is when trust has been lost in a way that it's accompanied by deception. And so deception seems to be the criteria that makes trust very difficult to restore. Think about an affair in a marriage. That kind of trust is much harder to regain, and it appears to be because of the lies usually that go along with that kind of breach. You know, it's usually not the affair itself. It's the lies. In fact, you hear people who have experienced that say the lying was the worst part. So deception does make trust very difficult to restore. But trust can be restored, and it's not as hard as people think. And in a little while, we're going to start talking about some of the behaviors that build and restore trust. So I'm going to just put a bookmark on that question for now, because there's a few things that we're going to cover, and then we'll circle back to that question. I think we've got some good ideas that will help you out.
Awesome. All right. Can we take a one other that's come through on the chat window?
One more.
Yeah,
okay.
One more.
Yep. So what do you do as an operations director when the boss doesn't trust you and micromanages you? I'm adding a few words there. So what do you do as an operations director? What do you do when someone doesn't trust you, specifically your boss, and instead chooses to micromanage?
You know, Susan and I talked before this call, and we said, you know what, having conversations about trust and what to do about trust is not going to be difficult at all. People are going to want to talk about this. And in fact, we even planned this webinar so that towards the end we can take these kinds of questions and really begin digging in a little bit. I'll give you my short answer for now, which is it is about behaviors. You have to think proactively about things that you do and actions that you will take to address that lack of trust with the micromanaging boss. And again, we're going to circle back around to some of these behavioral kinds of ideas and talk about what that might look like, what that intervention might look like.
That sounds great.
Okay.
Good.
So let's keep going. When I talk to teams about trust, one of the first places I like to start, and one of the places that Susan and I start with Go Team, is with an important awareness about the dimensionality of trust. And by that, I mean there are different kinds of trust that we experience. And I think this is something that we can all relate to. Think about the people you trust. You'll discover that you trust them for different reasons. There are some people you trust because of who they are and their integrity. And there are some people you trust because of what they can do, their capability. And it's possible to have trust in one without the other, right? I mean, I think about my 11-year-old son, Oliver. I trust him to be truthful and kind and generous because he's that kind of person. You know, he has that integrity as a human being. He's got that basic goodness, and I trust him to be that kind of person. However, I don't trust Oliver to drive my car. And I don't trust him to make investment decisions for me. He has integrity, but he does not have that capability. And so I don't extend trust in that area, right?
Right.
So on the other hand, you know, recently my Jeep's transmission went out last year. I've been driving the Jeep for like 13 years now, and the transmission went out. And so I went to a transmission guy here in town to replace it. I heard he was good. And he was. He did a good job. However, I'm not going to invite that guy to babysit my kids. You know, I mean, I have trust in his capability, but it's not that I doubt his personal integrity. It's just I don't have that base of experience to have built up that trust in his personal integrity. So there's a case where I have trust in the capability, but it hasn't been built for the integrity. So you see how this works, right?
Yes.
So when it comes to your influence in teams, which kind of trust do you need, integrity or capability? And I know you're on mute. It's kind of a rhetorical question. I think the answer is obvious. I can imagine everybody nodding their head saying, you want both. You don't want
to. Actually, people can respond through the chat window. One person actually says, are both necessary in business? And another person says both.
Are both necessary in business? I might leave that as a rhetorical question for your self-reflection. I'll tell you my bias. The teams that I've been part of that were the highest functioning, highest performing, had very exceptionally high levels of both kinds of trust. And I've been part of high capability teams that did not have high integrity, and things did not go well.
Now, I'm reminded of a supervisor I had one time who was very capable at work, David. In other words, she had could do her job well. Does that make sense? And in other words, the demands of the job. But once she left the building, there were some areas of her life that she had low integrity in. Now, back at the office, she had I saw her as high integrity, but then I saw her outside of the work situation, and in this social area, I discovered that she had some low integrity. So what are your thoughts about that? I mean, is it how does that play out on a team? Or, you know, I must say that when I saw what she did and what she was saying, it influenced everything that happened back at work. Now, had I never seen what happened, I may not have ever had that opinion. Does this make sense?
Sure, it does. Sure, it does. And, you know, the question is, can you compartmentalize integrity? And can you have integrity at work but not in other places of your life? And I don't think integrity works that way, and I believe that's what you were responding to. And if this colleague was on her best behavior, but then you learned that, you know, you didn't actually state the behavior. If it's that she talks about others in a demeaning way when they're not present, you know, I'm just throwing that out as an example. If she
right.
does that off the job, that's going to make you wonder, is she doing that on the job?
Mm-hmm.
Is she talking about me that way when I'm not in the room? So it affects your perception and your ability to work, no doubt about it.
Okay.
So I'm mindful of the time, so I'm going to keep rolling forward because I know there's a lot of questions about specific scenarios and behavior, so let's keep going. So we've looked at these two dimensions, and I invite you to think about this a little more personally. You know, we usually think first about other folks and people we know who have integrity but not capability, or vice versa. But I'd like you to think about times when people have lost trust in you. And so when that has happened, in which of these areas do you think you are more likely to fall down? When people have lost trust in you, is it more likely going to be because of your integrity or your capability? And that's a rhetorical question. I don't want you to start confessing in the chat window. But this is an important self-awareness, and it's a great thing to begin reflecting about. So the questions that I'm hearing consistently are, what do I do? I mean, I'm hearing that from you, Tom. I've heard that from some of the questions in the chat window. What do I do when? So how can we go about building trust in our teams? And so there's that old saying that goes, you can't talk your way out of a problem that you behaved yourself into, you know? And so trust is built and lost on behaviors, on things you do. And so if you have questions about the trust in your team, the intervention may be complex, but one thing I can tell you for sure is it will involve action. You have to do something. And so I want to show you a framework that will affect how you take action. And I think this is really a helpful way to think about trust and being more purposeful about extending trust in your team. And it's an idea that comes from the speed of trust, and it's called smart trust. And here's how this idea works. This is the smart trust matrix, which is an idea from Stephen M. R. Covey. And it's one of those great four-quadrant models. And it says that there are two axes for thinking about the trust that we extend to other people. So if you look at the y-axis going up and down, this is our propensity to trust. You know, for some people, have you noticed it just seems easier for some people to extend trust. And other people withhold their trust. It's harder for them to extend trust. And there may be a lot of reasons for that. It usually involves their history. Things that happened in the past, or it may be any other number of things. But for whatever reason, some people give trust very easily, some people it's very difficult, or there's any other number of stops on that continuum. Then, as you see on this horizontal axis, there's the level of analysis. Some people think think a great deal about trust before they extend it. You know, perhaps they conduct a risk analysis. Perhaps they're very purposeful about saying what's at stake. They're very thoughtful about how and when and where and under what conditions they will extend the trust. And other folks, and frankly this is me quite often, conduct low analysis, usually because we're just not that purposeful or thoughtful about it. You know, we don't actively and intentionally stop and say, what are the risks? What are the stakes? What can happen? So this creates one of those four-quadrant models. Let's take a look at the four quadrants real quickly. Let's start with this top left quadrant. This is called blind trust. Blind trust is people who extend their trust very easily and with very low analysis. We start our lives in this quadrant. Think about infants and children. I mean, that's the ultimate expression of blind trust. They simply trust their parents. You know, at its best, blind trust creates very loyal bonds of relationship and friendship. And as a strategy, it can work as long as you encounter people who are trustworthy. But when you encounter someone who's not trustworthy, watch out. You know, the downside of blind trust is gullibility. You know, I still get these emails from some widowed Nigerian princess who wants to deposit $10 million in my bank account if I'll just give her my bank account numbers. You know, and she sounds so sympathetic and so lonely. I just want to help her. That's gullibility. I always wonder where the people are that are falling for that, because those emails keep coming. I'm sure you've seen those too.
Oh, yes.
Let's go down here to low analysis withholds trust. These are people who simply have no trust. People who withhold their trust and they don't even think about why. It's just not there. It's absent and it's not even an option. These are people who have a hard time trusting anybody, including themselves. Very often a lack of self-trust is in this quadrant. And these can be people who have a hard time really getting anything accomplished. And frankly, on this model, this is not where I see the biggest challenges come. I've encountered people in this no trust category before, but much more frequently, where I see challenges is over here in this lower right. These are people who withhold their trust and they conduct high analysis. In other words, they can tell you exactly why they're not extending trust, and they've got good reasons for it. You know, if you ever hear people say things like, if you want something done right around here, you have to do it yourself, you know, that's distrust. And very often, distrust is defensible. And so people who are distrustful think that they're being good stewards. They've got a good reason why, and they'll tell you. And so this is where the real challenges are in organizations and in teams. And the challenge then is to move from this lower right quadrant up here to the upper right. And these are people who are willing to extend their trust, but they do it with high analysis. And this is what Stephen Covey calls smart trust or wise trust. These are people who don't trust all the time. They don't. You know, in a conference call like this about the subject of trust, it's easy to assume, oh, trust is always the right answer. We should always extend trust. No, not necessarily. A good manager, a good steward of resources, exercises this smart trust, begins with a bias for extending trust, has that propensity, but says, I'm going to manage how I extend trust to you. Back to Oliver. One day, I'm going to ride along with him in the car as I teach him how to drive. I'm going to be shrewd in how I extend that trust. As, you know, as his dad, I want to help him build that capability, and that's smart trust. So,
David, can I ask, when you, at the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned your early conversations with the Franklin Covey organization around the speed of trust, and what quadrant would you say that conversation fell into. It seems like it would be WiseTrust.
It was WiseTrust. Somebody else asked me that very same question. Because you're
okay.
Right, the way I tell the story, it almost sounds like Blind Trust, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you said, I mean, where was the analysis and high analysis in that conversation or that relationship?
I think it's important to note that I did not walk in cold off the street. We'd been in conversation over email. And,
okay.
You know, I and my colleagues bought a plane ticket to Salt Lake City, and so we had made an investment. We had already shared a little bit of our intent with the work. They had shared a little bit of theirs. And so some groundwork had been laid, and we had some sense of each other.
Okay.
I would say a lot of it was intuition as well, because that first meeting when we sat across the table from Stephen and his team, he still didn't really know us. So there was some assessment, some analysis that was taking place in the moment, and was very personal and very intuitive, and it resulted in him and his team extending an enormous amount of trust to us.
Hmm.
And that's a credit to them, perhaps, as much as it is to our team.
Hmm. Okay.
So the challenge as a leader in your team is to begin thinking about this smart trust, making a purposeful commitment to extend trust, but then being wise about it, thinking through what's at stake, thinking through the risks. Tell you what, I'm going to stop this conversation here. We can come back to WiseTrust later in our dialogue, but I would like to hand it back over to Susan so we can talk now a little bit more about, you know, how do we put this to work? What do we start doing in our team? So, Susan, it's back over to you.
Great, thanks. And I know you're advancing to the next slide. It just delays a little bit till we see it, but that's okay. So, David has said a number of times how important behaviors are as we talk about trust. And so the Go Team module that David and I have developed, which is about a two-hour module, sometimes a little longer for some teams or bigger teams, we start out with doing some buy-in conversations, you know, what's trust and why is it important and so on. But then we move through a process, and David's showing you now on the screen some post-its or stickies, if you will. And what we do is the first step of the process for the team to create together a set of behaviors as to how they want to build trust together is we give them two colors of post-its. As you can see here, we've got yellow ones and pink ones. And in this case, yellow behaviors or yellow post-its represent behaviors that will build trust. So as these examples, we should build time into the schedule to check for errors. We should assume the best motives in others. And we have team members generate as many post-its as make sense for them. Now, what I've learned is if I've got 30 people, because it's really a department, not a real small team, you got to limit how many post-its they're allowed to make. But anyway, you get your post-its, and the pink post-its then are behaviors that can damage trust in this team. For example, responding to feedback defensively. What we find is the behaviors that people are putting on these post-its connect back to their experiences they've already had in the team. For example, if responding to feedback defensively is a post-it that comes up, I promise you somebody in that team has been responding to feedback defensively, or somebody has had a really bad experience in the past with that. And so we get all of these post-its generated and on the wall, and everybody's voice is heard about how they see trust can be built and about how they think trust can be damaged in this team. David's going to show you a next slide, and on that, once we've generated all these post-its, which the people, by the way, get up and stick on the wall, then we have them separate them out and get them thinking about which of these have to do with integrity and which have to do with capability and which ones seem to have to do with both, where they just can't pull it apart, if you will, to say, oh, this is just about integrity or just about capability. And by, you know, creating on a whiteboard or a wall or whatever this grid, they begin to move them around. And here's what happens. They have conversations. You know, is this really integrity? Is this really capability? What do you mean by that? Tell me more. What were you thinking? Oh, I was thinking of it this way. And so what we've done is generated a dialogue about the behaviors that are important to this team in trust and opened up a conversation that otherwise sometimes can be very difficult to have. So we get the post-its all separated out and sorted out, and then we start narrowing them down. And actually what we find is, before they even categorize to this point, they usually have to collate them, refine them. You know, you have two or three post-its that say the same thing, so they work to come up with the language that makes the most sense. And finally, from here, begin to narrow down. We try and encourage them to have no more than 10 behaviors that they want to hold themselves accountable to as a team. And so some of them will use dots or whatever works best in the moment, but to give people a chance to weigh in and vote on which ones do you like, how would you rewrite them, and so on. I've done this a variety of ways, depending on whether I've got a three-person team, which I've done this with as few as three people, or 30 people in the room when I did it with a whole global HR organization who was meeting for their annual meeting. And narrow them down. Sometimes I'll give them to groups and have them narrow them down until we finally come down to what the group all agrees are the top 10 or sometimes fewer. So somewhere 6 to 10 behaviors that they agree they will all commit to. And so we go through a process to be sure they all commit and so on. And then give them a chance to self-assess. And so then each individual in their Go Team booklet writes down the new behaviors the team has all agreed on, and then on a scale of 1 to 5, they assess how they themselves are behaving on that for the team. Then they have a conversation about that. It's amazing how people say, you know what, I don't think I come through on commitments as much as I could, or I'm not as good at that as Larry is, and you know what, that's something I want to focus on. And so we have them work through and talk about that and out of it make commitments to each other about adhering to these behaviors they've created together and also about what they want to do if anybody falls by the wayside a little bit, how they'll bring people back on board with gentle conversations. Always encourage them to have a follow-up, you know, how about in 30 days, check in, see how you're doing, reassess, and so on. And I just found the dialogue that happens when the group goes through a process like this together begins any healing that might need to happen in a team that's hurt or broken, or for a relatively new team begins to lay a foundation of how they are going to work together going forward. And it really is very positive. David's going to show you another slide on this just to give you an idea of what are some of the kinds of behaviors we generally hear. And what we're actually going to show you here are the 13 behaviors that Covey has identified as 13 key trust behaviors. I don't ever share this with a team, but I promise you what they come up with as their set of behaviors, it's all over this stuff. It's about listening. It's about being straight forward. It's about being loyal to one another. It's about doing what you say you're going to do. It's about accountability and so on. And so it just connects back really, really nicely to what Covey has been telling us, some of us for 20 years, right, that we really need to pay attention to. So our hope by just sharing this little bit is, number one, with David sharing the dimensions of trust and the trust matrix, getting you maybe have some new ways to think about or talk about trust when you're talking with teams. And then by sharing a little bit of the Go Team is to give you an idea of how you actually move a team forward in this topic, but also, of course, to get you excited a little bit about Go Team. We'd love it if you'd get excited about that. So I think David will move us forward to the Q&A screen. It just says questions and issues, and we probably have about 5 minutes for questions before we want to just do a little wrap-up piece. So if you're getting anything on chat, Tom, or if anybody's got a specific question now back to anything we've talked about, either David or I would be happy to respond. And you may want to come, we may need to come back to something earlier as well.
Okay. Susan, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So a question did come in directly relating to the Post-it note piece that you just shared, and it was Jackie that asks, is this activity one that can be done right after trust is broken, or should it pre-work be done first? And I guess she's asking, you notice that there's, you're the leader of the team, you're able to influence the team. Do you do this, or do you lead up to this activity?
Now, that's a really good question, Jackie. Thanks for asking that. You know, it really varies as to when I use this with a team. Sometimes I'm called in a team that I, you know, have never worked with, don't know anything about, and I'm told that trust is an issue. And when I sit down and really understand what's going on, I realize the team doesn't even know if they're a team, what kind of a team they are, where they are in stages of team development. So I often will start with a more foundational conversation that maybe shows the stages of team development, and they'll see that they're storming, and so we'll talk about, you know, one of the ways to get out of storming might be to do some work around building trust. And so in a way, by starting someplace else, it has them asking for, please could we spend time on trust, versus having them feel like we're stuffing trust down their throat as a module. So that's one situation. Other situations, I've already been working with the team for a while, or I know of the team, and it, you know, how part of our role, I think, is to recognize when it's time for them to have this conversation, whether we're the leader or the facilitator. And so I think the team's ready to begin to talk about this. And so is there one particular way to do it? Not necessarily, but there is, does need to be some conversation, I think, to assess, is the team ready to talk about this really important topic? And are you or the facilitator ready to manage whatever's going to come up in the conversation, because real stuff is going to come up in the conversation?
Oh, that's good.
I hope that helps.
Yes, yes. So a related question has come in around this, and that is, has this work been used to supplement five dysfunctions of a team? Because one team went through it recently with a focus on building trust, so it would be great to pull in more. So maybe you could talk a little bit about, I know that you and I are both fans of the five dysfunctions, and
yeah.
I see the Go Team resources as, for those of us on this call, if you are a fan of the five dysfunctions, by Patrick Lencioni, you're going to like Go Team resources, but maybe you can specifically address this.
Yeah, it's a perfect question. I have a couple of different clients who have come to me and said, "Okay, I got a team. They did the, they read the five dysfunctions. They did the assessment. You know, trust is low. Conflict's a problem." So they relate right back to it, and they say, "So, but we don't know what to do next."
Yeah.
And that's where Go Team is so fabulous. And in fact, David and I created a one-sheet document that you can find on the Go Team Resources website that you can download the PDF. We've got the Lencioni triangle of the five dysfunctions. And then next to each of the five, we've listed Go Team modules that we think can help the team further their conversation and learning together on that particular topic. And so there's a very good marriage here. Again, people say, yep, you know, we've done everything we can with Lencioni. What do we do next? And the answer is, hey, try some Go Team modules, because we think they'll take you to the next level as well. And in fact, David, can you go to the next screen?
There was one other question about...
Okay, and David will move the screen while we take this last question.
Yeah, yeah, and let's see, it was about... hold on, I got to scroll up. And it was Daniel writes, there's so many chats coming in. What do you do when the owner's wife that knows nothing about the business makes the owner not trust people? So this sounds like, I'm not sure if Daniel's suggesting that the owner's wife is not involved in the business, but must be involved at least tangentially, and is influencing the culture of the business. Maybe this is a small business, but so what do we do when outside influences are people, or perhaps people are tangentially influencing negatively and impacting the level of trust in the community?
Do you want to take that one, David?
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm going to go back to Covey's 13 behaviors. A lot of times when I hear different trust scenarios, it's helpful either to go here, or if your team has created the trust exercise where you've identified your own behaviors, go back and look at the behaviors that you identified together and then draw upon those, especially since the team has agreed to be held accountable to those. So in this case, and I'm sure there's all kinds of complexity to the scenario that I can't possibly speak to without knowing more, but my first thought is, depending on where your relationship is, you might want to begin with by affirming the relationship. Maybe this is what Covey would call show loyalty. And so begin with a statement of intent. I want to work for you. I want to produce great work for this organization. And then move to confronting reality. There are some things going on that I have perceived that I would like to talk about. And it's best if this is a conversation about behavior. If you make it a conversation about motive or intent, that, I have kids, and I can't prove whether my kids meant to do something or not. I can only speak to the actual behaviors, and that's true in organizations too. I can't speak to somebody's bad intent, but I can say I want to talk about broken trust that I see around me based on things that have been said. Perhaps there's some practicing accountability. Let's talk about roles and what it means to be a leader in this business and to be an employee and also to be outside of the business. So whatever the intervention is, it's behavioral, and I also know that it's going to be pretty touchy just based on what you've shared. But it does begin at this behavioral level, and so maybe some of these start to spark some ideas of what that conversation can look like. I do find it helpful to begin with a statement of your own intent and to articulate the end game. I want us to have a great working relationship, and I'm committed to do whatever I have to do, and I want to be a part of this team. So, start by articulating that end state, and then go do the hard work that will help you get there. Without knowing more, that's my best shot at answering your question.
Great. And David, you might see we're at the top of the hour. Could you show the slide with the special offer that we have for people today? I want to be sure they are aware of that. So as part of you participating today, David, I really appreciate you joining in and hearing what we have to say about trust and giving us some of your perspective as well. So what we will do is extend an offer that if you would like to try out some GoTeam, we'll give you a month here to place an order, and we'll give you 15% off of that order. We'll give you our email IDs and website information, and that'll tell you how to find us and get to us, and worst case, you can always get to Tom to get to us as well. We're happy to talk to you more about what GoTeam can do and how it might help you, and see if we can be any help to you on any of the issues you might be dealing with.
That's great. So I wrote in the chat here that, full disclosure, I love using the GoTeam resources with the teams that I serve, and encourage other people to do the same. So at least to check it out. Go to the website and take a look at what's out there. David and Susan, this is my little endorsement, is that they are like us in that they work with lots of different teams. They are working in lots of different scenarios. They needed to have a flexible system to deliver content and understand where a group is. And so this is my life. I am contacted on a regular basis by lots of different organizations and teams. And so I was looking for something that I could that looks great. When I say looks great, the printed materials, when you show up with them, I think that you're going to the people that you're working with are going to look at this and say, wow, this is really great material. I mean, it looks great, and the material in it is really great. So, and it's low tech. It's not when I say low tech, there's no PowerPoint. It's inclusive. It's facilitative. We're drawing information out of people using this this stuff. And David and Susan, I could go into all the groups that they've worked with and the years that they have working with teams. They understand. They've seen lots of different things out there, and so that's my two pieces there.
Thank you, Tom.
So, yeah, and I'm happy to talk with anybody here. If you want, don't want to talk to David and Susan, or you want to schedule a conversation with me, I'm happy to connect with you. So, great. So some people asked about a special code. Is there a special code for this offer?
No, just tell us you were on the ITAF call.
Okay, great. All right, very good. So just let everybody know. So as we wrap up, anything else from you, David, before we wrap up?
No, I always appreciate this opportunity. I love being with your audience and with your fellow team facilitators, and thank you for hosting us today.
Yes, well, and I want to say thank you to David and Susan for, one, sharing their wisdom and time and energy with us. And we've done this multiple times. This is at least our third call. You can go back to the IATF website and download the recordings. And there's David on the video. You can access that past recordings. And this recording will be up again soon. And I'm hoping that we can convince David and Susan to come back again. It's always an action-packed hour. And to add to the action, we had lots of technology pieces here to deal with. I'm still learning. I appreciate everybody's patience with that. And we're going to continue to evolve and use some really cool things so that we can serve you better, share ideas better, build our community better, and change the world. That's what we're all here to do, improve the world. So, David, let's see how long it takes to see you wave. There's going to always be a delay. There we go. Oh, there's David back with the screen. All right. Well, everybody, thanks again. And I'm going to be signing off, and we'll have this recording posted soon. There's David waving. Maybe eventually we'll also have Susan on there. All right, David, Susan, thanks again.
All right, thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.